Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Cool, wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Hol dir dein Geld zurück mit Wieso Steuer.
Stu does America.
Subscribe to the program, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Be sure to hit the bell for notifications. Get your Stu Does America merch at StuDoesMerch.com. Use the code STU10, get 10% off your order. Steve Baker's here, latest January 6th info that the Biden administration tried to cover up. Speaking of Biden, we continue to hear just how broken his mental state was during his last term. Not news to you, but apparently news overall. We'll go into the latest there, but we're going to start by doing the end of COVID grifting. Is it finally? Are we finally here? Probably not. But it is interesting to see where we are in this little process. In fact, the latest part of the COVID grift that is potentially going away, the student loan pause. Now, that's today, by the way. Do you believe they did that to these students on Cinco de Mayo? Of all days, the most holy day in the college calendar, Cinco de Mayo. Student loan collections restart May 5th. That's today. Here's what you need to know from NBC News, which, of course, is not what you need to know at all. In fact, they give you all sorts of things you don't need to know. But one of the things you need to know, apparently, according to NBC News, is what happened to loan forgiveness? Who knows what could have possibly happened? Let me give you one thing that happened. The Constitution. Another thing that happened, the Supreme Court. Another thing that happened, the presidential election. Things all kind of moved against you getting all that free money. I'm so sorry about that. Now, the administration, if you remember, kind of like to trace this back to the COVID era, 2020, this is actually a Trump era program. In 2020, COVID hits. They say, OK, everyone can't work. We're having all this economic trouble. Let's let everybody pause their repayments of student loans. Okay, kind of a sensible thing at first. You know, you get nervous when these things pop up because you never know how long they're going to last. But okay, in 2020, you remember that situation. We kind of give people a pass, I guess, for that. Then we go through 2020. Then we get into 2021. Biden takes office. He continues the pause. 2022 continues the pause. 2023 continues the pause. 2024 continues the pause. You see, this is why we were nervous about this program at the very beginning. Now Donald Trump is back as president once again. And they're starting to try to clean this stuff up. U.S. Department of Education to begin federal student loan collections. Other actions to help borrowers get back into repayment. American taxpayers will no longer be forced to serve as collateral for irresponsible student loan policies, said Linda McMahon, the Secretary of Education. The Biden administration misled borrowers. The executive branch does not have the constitutional authority to wipe debt away, nor do the loan balances simply disappear. Hundreds of billions have already been transferred to taxpayers. Going forward, the Department of Education, in conjunction with the Department of Treasury, will shepherd the student loan program responsibly and according to the law. What a noble concept that is, which means helping borrowers return to repayment, both for the sake of their own financial health and our nation's economic outlook. Now, these are kind of the basics here, right? First of all, basic number one is COVID-19 not really part of our lives anymore. Now, you might say, well, I just had it last week, and I'm sorry for that. I'm sorry that you did. People do continue to get sick with COVID-19 here and there a lot less frequently. The results, of course, a lot less dire. Far fewer people are dying of COVID-19 these days. It's not really a big concern for most people anymore. And in fact, hasn't been for many years. OK, we all know that this justification for a student loan pause is a drawn out relic that should not be around anymore. The problem is, when you're trying to win a presidential election, it's really difficult to say to people, hey, we're going to start turning on your payments again. Joe Biden didn't want to say that. So he didn't say it, and he avoided it over and over and over again. Now, we know in like 30 years, there will still be some remnants of the COVID-19 pandemic in some sort of policy that is justifying something, because that's always what happens in these situations. Never let a crisis go to waste. But like, it's kind of a basic thing, right? You should be able to take a loan out. When you take a loan out, you agree to terms. I'm going to explain this process to people who don't understand. When you take a loan out, you agree to terms to repay that loan. Then you repay that loan based on those terms. That's the beginning and end of it, right? Like, if you actually get a loan and you enter that agreement, you pay it back until it's over. That's how this is supposed to work. Not everyone gets a pass on that whole paying back thing. Now, the media treatment of this, of course, has been exactly what you'd expect. It has been the typical situation where they try to scare everyone and say that, you know, Donald Trump's mean. It's basically the beginning and the end of the coverage. Donald Trump is mean. ABC News covered this and gave us some interesting facts on this program that I was not aware of, frankly, and also some spin that I did not, of course, expect. Here it is from the Start Here podcast.
It's important to note that student loan borrowers who couldn't pay their debts typically don't pay them because they don't want to, but it's because they simply can't. Mm. So this has been a hardship on them over the last 5 years. And now, for the first time, they're going to have to repay the government, in which the Department of Education says they willingly took these loans. Now they got to pay them back.
Oh my gosh, did they really say that? That they willingly took loans so they have to pay them back? What a bunch of jerks. You mean the entire foundation of banking? Did they, is that what they're enforcing on this? I love the spin here, though. Think about the situation. They entered into loans that they agreed to go into, number one. Number two, they received the money and utilized that to get a college education. Step three, in theory, again, we know how crappy a lot of these educations are, but in theory, they use that education to get higher payment, maybe to get a job, maybe to get a better job than they would have otherwise. We assume there's some value here. I will say, I'm not 100% sure of that part of it. I don't know that there's actually any value in a college education anymore, honestly. Outside of a couple very specialized jobs, I frankly don't know. And I will not be betting tens of thousands of dollars of my own money on my kid figuring it out. Because, frankly, neither one of them are going to be, daddy's not paying their way through the wonderful amusement park of modern college life. Sorry to break it to you, kids. That ain't happening. But another situation here is, to refresh your memory, it's not because they don't want to pay them back. It's because they simply can't. Now, we'll get into a little more detail on that here in a second. But, like, that obviously isn't true for a lot of people, right? A lot of people, I assume, took college loans out, went through college, and got good jobs, and have those jobs, and continue to have those jobs. It can't be nobody, right? I mean, that kind of is a real dark cloud over the college industry, even darker than the one that is currently in my mind, because if they can't provide anyone, you'd think there's a real issue here. Of course, some people are very capable of this, but they're looking at the lay of the land. They're saying one side of the aisle is telling me I'm never going to have to pay because they're going to get rid of the loans completely. The other side is delaying this for multiple years. Why would I pay it back during that period? They say, frankly, the last 5 years have been a hardship. It's been a hardship on these borrowers for the past 5 years, and now for the first time they're going to have to repay the government. Well, the fact that it's the first time they're going to have to repay the government kind of says it wasn't a hardship for the past 5 years now, doesn't it? It's not a hardship when everyone's telling you you don't have to pay. What was it, the mental stress of, in theory, needing to pay in the future? It would have been nice if you had a 5-year period of no payment to utilize that time to potentially put away a couple of payments so it wouldn't be such a shock when they turn the payments back on. But apparently that was not expected of these college graduates. Really? College graduates can't figure this out? Now, it was even more dire than that, darker than that, more tragic than that. Yes, you having to make the payments that you agreed to 5 years after you agreed to them is so tragic. Let ABC News tell you why.
This could be potentially tragic for millions of borrowers, meaning they can't take any more financial student aid if they would elect to go back to school, meaning they can't get loans like for cars or homes.
A student loan default will stay on your credit report for up to 7 years.
Oh, no.
So that means it can impact and drag down your credit score for that long of a period.
You know, this is a real life consequence for millions of people.
The real life consequence there of you taking out a loan and agreeing on it, then not paying it back, then going through a 5-year period where they don't make you pay it back, then going through another period where they try to get their money and can't, then you default on it, and the consequence is you might not be able to get more loans. I got news for you. You shouldn't get any more loans if that's the way you handled the last loan. You're supposed to get a car loan on top of what you just did. At one point, he even says they can't get more financial student aid if they would elect to go back to school. So they took the first loan out, went to school, didn't pay the loan back, and were supposed to cry they don't get another loan to go back to school again? This is insanity. Insanity. This is not the way the world works. But there's more. I mentioned earlier, hey, you know, like some people, if you go into an arrangement to take a loan out and you go to school and you get this wonderful education, shouldn't you pay it back? You'd think, because that's the way it was, and they gave you 5 years to go through all of COVID-19 and all of the recovery and to get another job, you'd think most people, right, would be paying the loans back. Okay, like, can we come up with the circumstance? I'm sure we can. And I mean this part sincerely, even though I'm being very sarcastic in most of this monologue. Of course there are people who went through a terrible thing. Maybe they had a good job in 2019. COVID comes in, shuts the economy down, not to their liking. Maybe their job got canceled or their company got destroyed because of COVID. It didn't come back. They weren't able to get an equivalent same job after the COVID pandemic. This did happen to a lot of people. Maybe it shut down their small business, destroyed it, and now they don't have that business anymore. They're working at a lower level job or they're not working at all. Of course, there are examples. And of course, there are situations. By the way, we should note, built into the whole situation they're going with now is you can't pay more than 15% of your income toward student loan payments. So if you don't have a job, you're not required to pay anything. That's already built in to this. So we're not even talking about those people. But could there be somebody who's now, like, you know, living day to day? Of course. Those people do exist. There's millions and millions of people in this program. There are some people who are really struggling. Maybe something went bad. Maybe they had a health concern. All these things are there. There has been in the past, of course, ways to deal with those individuals. But you'd think, what, 80, 90% of people by now are past the COVID-19 pandemic, right? And what number do you want to put on it? 95, 92? Something high, right? So what percentage of student loan borrowers are actually paying their loans back right now? Which percentage has looked at this and said, okay, well, obviously, like, the COVID-19 thing is over, we're going to start paying. And of course, there's another percentage that would say, oh gosh, well, the government's not going to make me pay, I'm not going to pay. What's that split look like? Listen.
There are 43 million student loan borrowers in this country, and about a third of them have already started making their repayments.
A third!
But then there's the 5 million who have defaulted on their student loan payments, and another 4 who are close to defaulting on those payments and could risk being in default when their repayments begin. Mm-hmm. The rest of the student loan borrowers in this country are mainly in forbearance, meaning that their repayment is still paused.
I mean, that is wild, though, that at this point, with all these tens of millions with student loans, only a third of them have even started resuming paying them back.
That is wild now, isn't it? It kind of is wild, right? You've entered into a contract and only a third of people are actually paying back the loans that they are contractually agreed to. And you think, oh, gosh, these people, they're not even like trying to do this. And you can get on that case and you can kind of on the high horse, you can think about it, or you can kind of think about the reality of the situation here, which is, if I'm sorry, most of the time, if people don't tell you to pay, you're not going to pay. And frankly, you can definitely get to the point mentally where you'd think to yourself, geez, if I do pay, let's say I pay off half of this student loan and then they cancel all these payments. Who am I? I'm an idiot. I just wasted all of this money paying back this loan when they were going to forgive it anyway. The messages sent to people are completely insane at this point. Now, student loan collections are resuming as record of number of borrowers fall behind on their payments.
More on this after nearly 5 years since the U.S. government first paused federal student loan payments and interest accrual. Again, that's an important part. This interest was not building during this period. A temporary relief measure associated with COVID-19. We now know that May 5th is the day that they're going to start getting these loans. Referrals for collection have been put on hold since March 2020 because of the pandemic. That grace period was extended multiple times by the Biden administration. One in five borrowers are seriously delinquent or have a past due payment of 90 days or more, according to a new analysis by TransUnion, one of three major credit bureaus. The analysis looks at the percentage of student loan borrowers at risk of default and the impact that it has on their credit scores. Of the 19.6 million borrowers, TransUnion found that 20.5% of student loan borrowers were at risk of defaulting. The figure, which TransUnion estimates could be much higher, outpaces the credit bureau's previously recorded all-time high of 15.4% in 2012. You look at that and comparing it to other, it's hard to know what that number really means because a lot of people are just not paying because they just don't think they need to. And they might look like they're in default or close to default because they've been living paycheck to paycheck. And it's going to be difficult for them to pick up these payments. We also just don't know how many of them are sitting back and saying, like, look, I'm not going to start paying until I'm required to pay. I mean, I guess every time if you went to the to a restaurant and they just never dropped a check and you said, hey, what do I owe you? And they said, well, don't worry about it right now. A lot of people are just going to walk out of the restaurant being like, hey, I got a free meal. That doesn't necessarily mean all these people are going to default, but it does have another large amount of pressure on our economy, which is already having its struggles, as you may have noticed. The ABC News or podcast does eventually get around to a lot of this stuff, understanding kind of the basics of how, I don't know, society is supposed to operate in an economy where you make choices and you deal with consequences.
I'm just thinking of like the uncertainty also seems like the particularly problematic part of all of this, right? So the Biden administration said a lot of you probably aren't going to have to pay these back. The court said, no, they're going to have to pay these back. Nothing happened for a while. The Biden administration was like, we'd like you to, but you don't have to. We're not going to come after you. The Trump administration has basically said that's unfair to everyone involved. It's unfair to people who are paying. It's unfair to taxpayers. Mm-hmm. And it's even unfair to these Americans with student debt who are like, maybe I should just hold on and not pay because it could be wasted money if I finally get my debts forgiven.
Yeah.
And that seems to be why the Trump administration is like, no, we're putting our foot down. You're going to start paying and you're going to start paying right now unless you can prove severe financial hardship.
Couldn't have said it better myself. That's exactly what's going on. And every part of this is illogical except for the people who want free money. Now, I don't know. I guess in left land, you don't have to actually live up to your financial obligations. I suppose that's part of their reality. It's not part of mine. And, you know, Donald Trump, who is changing this policy, deserves some credit here. But, I mean, it's not a lot. It's not a high hurdle to clear for him. These are basic facts. When you take out a loan, you have to repay it. And if you can't repay it, you get held responsible for that. There are structures in place to help you pay your loans if you don't happen to be paying. This is something that has gone on for a while, and some of those structures might even lead to something like bankruptcy, but that's the end of the road. There's a million ways to delay this, and built into these systems are if you can actually prove financial hardship, you can get an extended delay. So these are only people who can't actually prove a financial hardship but still don't pay. Those are the people we're talking about. And the media is making it out to be the most, you know, terrible thing that's ever been done. Every single person would sign up for a program that says, hey, here's a bunch of thousands of dollars and you never have to pay it back. That's just a gift. That's what that is. It's a giveaway. Everyone would love that. That sounds wonderful. It just isn't a thing that actually exists because it's not a gift when it comes from somebody else's pocketbook. If you're just ripping off other taxpayers, people who didn't go to college, people who may have chosen not to go to college because they couldn't afford it, people who went to good blue-collar jobs that support our economy, and now they're floating the boat for some expensive car or some other, a Coachella trip for some rich college graduate that doesn't feel like paying their loans back, that's fair? Not to me. And I will say there's an element here of the left implementing a form of policy without actually implementing it. They've wanted free college for all forever. I mean, Biden kind of ran on that, free college for all. Remember, he wanted free community college for all because that's the only university they'll let me into. And he tried to push that through for a while. Nobody really went for it. It was not a popular proposal. People like free money, but like generally speaking, was not going anywhere and never went anywhere. He didn't really even pursue it when he became a president of the United States, except in this way, right? He was able to say, well, free college for everyone who went to college already. And he tried to wipe away all of these debts. And like that feels like a good policy to a lot of people. Hey, I have a debt. Debts are bad. You'll get rid of that debt for me. Thank you so much. What a wonderfully powerful and popular policy. But this is just essentially a backdoor way of implementing free college for people. If you just tell them they have to take a loan out and then they never have to pay the loan back, what have you done? You've implemented a major left-wing policy goal without actually having to go through the debate of implementing a major left-wing policy goal. All of this is the typical kind of crap you get from Washington, D.C., and it should be called out. And Donald Trump is doing the right thing here in holding people responsible. When you can find places to work with them, great. But generally speaking, you have to be able to pay your debts back. The government never seems to do that, but you and I should have to do it, at least if we're going to remain a rational member of a polite society. I want to talk to you about another bizarre going on here in Washington, D.C. The way that Harry Dunn, the police officer that had to deal with January 6th, and he's been kind of promoted as the hero of January 6th, what the actual truth is behind that story. We have an exclusive investigation on that here at The Blaze, and Steve Baker joins us to talk about it next. Well, Mother's Day is this week. Week after that, or not the week after that, but the next big holiday after that is Father's Day. And if you ever notice that dads just kind of seem to know exactly what to say when life gets complicated, I know I'm that way. I'm pretty much a perfect dad. I don't know if you know that. Calm the nerves before a big test, help survive the first sleepless nights as a new parent if your daughter gets old enough or your son gets old enough for that. That's what dads do. Right? Father's Day is coming up pretty quickly here, right after Mother's Day. And here's your chance to show dad or mom, for that matter, that you've actually been paying attention without spending money like Congress on a spending spree. Raycon wireless earbuds are the perfect gift for any dad who appreciates some peace and quiet, whether he is unwinding with his favorite podcast, which is obviously this one, tuning out distractions at work, which you can do with this podcast, or escaping the family's questionable taste in TV. Raycons deliver crisp audio. They feature 32 hours of battery life, active noise cancellation, and easily connect two devices at once if you like. With tens of thousands of five-star reviews, Raycon's latest model is their best yet. And here's the kicker. They cost about half the price of other personal audio brands. I will say, Father's Day, great gift idea for your dad. I will also say, I got my wife Raycons for Mother's Day in the past. Why? Because they're just the best you're going to find out there. Buyraycon.com/Stu. BuyRaycon.com/Stu. Get it today. Get 15% off site-wide. Buyraycon.com/Stu. Give dad or mom the gift of great sound because honestly, they've earned it. Buyraycon.com/Stu.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Zespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
He was fighting back insurrectionists across the Capitol.
I hope that we will get to a point where there will be an exhibit.
Every time I see Harry Dunn, you know, the police officer who saved the Capitol.
You're in hand-to-hand combat with a mob.
Officer Harry Dunn was in the heart of the battle.
Broke down in tears, telling fellow officers he'd been called the N-word.
This book isn't just about your feelings, it's about the truth.
He wept in the rotunda because so many racial slurs were directed at him.
They lied under oath.
They lied under oath.
That's right.
Who lied under oath?
Oh, this is going to be a fun one. Joined once again by Steve Baker, investigative journalist and Blaze Media opinion contributor. You can catch The Truth About January 6th, A Day in the Life of Harry Dunn, Part 3, Harryisms, right now on Blaze TV. Steve, thanks so much for coming back on the program.
Stu, it's good to be back.
Yeah,
thanks.
This is a great great piece to this puzzle. I watched it, it came out right before I went on vacation. I wanted to make sure we had you on to talk about it because It goes through, I mean, the first part of that trailer that we played is sort of the setup, right? Who the media told us Harry Dunn was, but you went through the evidence, you've seen the video, and you know that person doesn't seem to actually exist.
No, I'll tell you, Stu, the most stunning part about this, because I've been revealing, we'll call them the inconsistencies of Harry Dunn's story for over 2 years now. Even before I was with the Blaze, I was already releasing little bits and dribs and drabs out there that his story wasn't lining up with the official record as it was presented by starting with the January 6th Select Committee, and his congressional testimony under oath, his trial testimonies, which I witnessed myself there in D.C., and then his book that came out, which we got an advanced copy to here at the Blaze. So I had the opportunity to pour through that with a fine tooth comb and just compare it to the video evidence. Still to this day, I'm probably, I don't know this for a fact, but I think it's provable that I've had more access to the January 6th Capitol CCT video room than any other single journalist, including other members of our Blaze team, video analysts that went up to DC with me. And we've spent a lot of time, you know, hundreds of man hours pouring through this video and comparing it to those testimonies, to those interviews with all the MSM outlets, and it just doesn't add up. And the amazing part that I'm actually very proud of, despite the fact that the MSM will not refer to our research, not cover our stories, not even ask questions about it, is that they have yet to present a single second of alternative or contradictory video to what we've been able to present through our own research.
It really is an important point to highlight, because you go through and take point by point his telling of this day. And he's been on, you know, he's been a media whore. He's been everywhere. So he's told the story a million times. He's told very specific things about it, where he was, how this day went down. And you kind of just take it point by point and say, OK, he says he was here at this time. Here's the video of what he was actually doing. Was he actually fighting off a mob, or was he just standing around not doing much of anything, which seems to be what the truth was?
Yeah, the amazing part of this entire story is, as you heard in that little bumper that you did there, is that it is thought, because of what the MSM has presented to the American public, is that he's the hero of the day. Even one of the congressmen says he saved the Capitol. Mm-hmm. Actually, he did everything but that. He spent the entire time, for the most part, doing everything he could to avoid being in the presence of protesters, to avoid being where the action was. All of the things that he talks about, the bloody knuckles, the being hit with pepper spray and all manner of OC gases and things like that, these things just did not happen to him. And we know that because we're able to track him. It was a lot of work. I mean, it's hard work going through 41,000 hours worth of video and tracking a guy from the time he arrives in the morning till he leaves late at night and following him through that massive complex. But we did it, and we were able to find every single second of video that he shows up, not just Capitol CCTV, but Metropolitan Police body cams, as well as open source video from cell phones, things that were released through all the trials that we were able to get our hands on as well. So there was a tremendous amount of video data that we have. And I have challenged all of the naysayers. I've challenged the mainstream press, and I've challenged the groups like the Sedition Hunters. These are the open source investigators that we're working with and for the FBI, some of them paid by the FBI, that's confirmed as well, that we're doing this alternative research to help convict the protesters that were in the building that day. But despite my challenges, no one has presented a single shred of evidence of Harry Dunn ever engaging in battle with a single protester that day.
Yeah, I mean, really the closest that it comes is featured in your documentary, where he seems to have some sort of like verbal altercation with someone. Right. And despite the fact that he's been presented as this, you know, a bastion of credibility and, holding this incredible stature in this difficult time, he seems to lose it on somebody and get pulled off by other officers and removed from the situation. Is that how you saw that?
This happened more than once. So in the video evidence that we've found, and we've done stories on this. In fact, despite the fact that we have the conclusion, part three of A Day in the Life of Harry Dunn, just released last week. Before that, we had done a series of vignettes in which we specifically drilled down on certain aspects of his day. And one of those things is his longtime problem with anger issues, which in his own book, he admits goes all the way back to when he was in middle school, that his parents were putting in you know, counseling sessions for his anger issues then through high school, even into his marriage. There were domestic problems there with, a couple of times cops were called to his house because he was fighting with his wife, including one altercation with a firearm. All of those were suppressed, and he was never disciplined for those by the Capitol Police. But then when we get into the Capitol that day, on more than one occasion, he had lost his temper so severely in a completely non-violent time where there was no attacks going on or anything like that, that he actually displayed his temper so overtly that senior officers came over and either told him to calm down or they had him by order extracted from the scene to get him out of there because he was creating problems for them.
I mean, it's really stunning. one of the questions I had after watching this, and I know you've worked so hard on putting this together, was why Harry Dunn? Like, why did the media pick him as the guy to be the face of this? Because, you know, and we've talked about this before, like, the media has blown a lot of the stuff on January 6th out of proportion, calling it as bad as the Civil War and everything else. But there were clearly really bad things that happened there. There were officers who were in actual altercations with people who were attempting to commit violence on them. Some of them were hit over the head with things. There were bad things. Why didn't the media pick one of those officers and feature them instead of going down this road with Harry Dunn, where he seems to be the one guy that you shouldn't feature, you shouldn't draw attention to? Do you have any theory on that?
There's no theory to it. There's absolute proof of why he was selected. Early in the days after January 6th, a BuzzFeed journalist was looking to do a feature on and try and present maybe the racial component to that day. And he found an officer who was telling a story, and they actually went off the record because by rule at the Capitol Police, Harry Dunn, being a federal officer, is not supposed to be political at all. So he gave an off the record anonymous interview to BuzzFeed in which he claimed to have been called the N-word, you know, a dozen or so times during his battles that day and confrontations with the protesters. Well, but because of the nature of the story, it didn't take long for other officers to figure out who gave this inappropriate and rule breaking by Capitol Police policy interview. And so he went public. And when he did, the story began to escalate. And also the Capitol Police leadership kind of went, well, you know, it's a good story. It's got the racial component to it. And they allowed him to start making all of these appearances to large outlets. The next time he was interviewed by the shortly thereafter the BuzzFeed, he was interviewed by the New York Times in an actual podcast with one of their journalists, in which he escalates the story. And he talks about one particular incident with the Oath Keepers in which he was called the N-word 20, 30, 40, maybe as much as 50 times, or I'm sorry, by 50 people, 20 to 50 people that he was being chanted the N-word at. Now, this is the most video recorded event in human history, probably. If he had been chanted at by 50 people, the N-word, or anything else for that matter, it would have been captured on cell phone video. The FBI, individuals in the crowd, it would have made it onto X or Twitter at the time. It would be all over social media and YouTube. It would be everywhere. The point is it never happened. And in fact, one of our videos in our series about Harry Dunn specifically is about the N-word episode. It's quite lengthy because we did a lot of work just on that one thing. And there's just absolutely no evidence, not only of where he claimed it happened and then changed the place where he claimed it happened at first, And then he changed the place, or the person that he claimed started the chanting. He changed her identity several times over the course of his testimonies in Congress, trials and FBI interviews, and then in his book as well. He was just wildly inconsistent in keeping the story straight to begin with, which obviously led me to the need to sniff it out.
Yeah, and we should point out, too, like, it wasn't just that, you'd think that this stuff would be appearing on Twitter or whatever if it had happened. You decided to just look for it, and you looked through all the videos, and there's no evidence of any such event occurring. One more before we go, Steve. We've got about a minute here. Do you expect anything to come from this? Like, I feel like it would be great if we had a media that would say, hey, you know what? Like, January 6th, we still think was really bad, and we still think Trump is really bad or whatever. But this one officer did lie to us, and we need to get this story straight. Is there any hope? I know you actually do have people that you speak with in the mainstream media.
Yeah.
Is there any hope that someone's going to pick this up and just say, hey, wait a minute, on this one little part of the story, we were misled?
Over a year ago, I was having lunch with a two-time Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist for one of the, I don't want to identify him, but one of the top three publications in America. All right. And he told me, he banged on the table at our lunch and he said, why do we not know this? Meaning my news organization. And I said, because you know why. I said, you're not allowed to ask the question. And even if you presented it in one of your articles or a editorial meeting, it would be squashed because it does not fit your news organization's narrative. And that's the primary problem. Now, back to your initial question, will there ever be anything to come of this? I spent all week last week in DC. We are continuing to work on this. We're getting better access now, but we're still running up against problems because there are obstructionists, unfortunately, in the GOP who want us to stop all January 6th investigations.
They wanted you to just... But why? Well, what's the... They just don't want any more attention drawn to it? What's the reasoning?
In the words of one of the leading conservative GOP congressman to another leading conservative chairman of a particular committee, he said, because it will compromise too many of our members.
All right. Well, that's interesting. Go ahead.
When I get permission to lower the boom on that, we talked about it the last time I was on with you and Glenn, is that we're going to name names. I just have to be cognizant of the sensitivities of the members, the Congress members involved that are having and dealing with and fighting through this on their own and trying to get through this blockade and through this obstructionism. But this is not the only source now, because fortunately, we have a whole new administration, and one of the things that I spent last week doing was meeting with new people. We're talking about the new actual administration officials who have the ability and the directive from the president's desk itself to get to the bottom of January 6th. That is an actual directive from President Trump, and I was there working with those administration officials last week.
All right. Well, there's a lot of questions I have, but I don't think you're going to be able to answer them quite yet, but I think you will in the future. I look forward to that.
They're coming.
They're coming. Steve Baker, investigative journalist and Blaze Media opinion contributor. You can check out the documentary. It's The Truth About January 6th, A Day in the Life of Harry Dunn, Part 3, Harryisms. It is available right now on Blaze TV. It's worth a watch because you've seen this guy being turned into a hero. You should see what he actually did on that day. Steve, thanks so much for coming back on the program.
Thank you, Stu.
So do you know what your money really supports? Is your investment portfolio quietly funding ideas you would never publicly stand behind? Most people never really ask this question. They invest hoping to grow their money, of course, but probably unaware that it might be supporting causes directly opposed to their values. Here is what you can do right now. Many investors overlook how much influence they have. Their investment dollars are votes. That's what it is. You're whether you like this or not, you're shaping corporate decisions every single day with your investments. I trust Constitution Wealth because they get it. They believe what we believe. They make sure that our money supports our principles and not undermines them. Are you ready to start using your investments to hold companies accountable? Act now. Help protect the future of America. Don't just watch from the sidelines. Visit constitutionwealth.com/blaze. constitutionwealth.com/blaze and get a free consultation right now. It's constitutionwealth.com/blaze. Constitution Wealth is a registered investment advisor. You should review Constitution Wealth's disclosures at constitutionwealth.com to understand their services and fees. All investing involves risk, and including, of course, the risk of loss. I am a client of the firm, and this is a paid endorsement. My opinions, as always, are my own. A new book says that Biden aides decided against a cognitive test in early 2024. They thought he would pass it, but they didn't want to do it because they were worried about what people might think, even just him taking one. I was like, well, is this the new Jake Tapper Thompson book? No, it's not that one. Is it the one from The Hill? No, it's not that one. It's another one, which I was just finding out about. 2024, How Trump Retook the White House and the Democrats Lost America, by authors, writers from The New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and Washington Post, all working in conjunction. All of a sudden, the journalism is all over the place. Where was the journalism like this back when all this was going on? I mean, Alex Thompson was doing stuff. We highlighted that, but there wasn't a lot of it back in the day. Apparently, that's where we are now. We're going to get all of our journalism after the fact. Way after. After all the possibilities of any repercussions are there, we're going to find out all about it. Well, at least we're going to find out about it. And I do think major investigations are necessary. Trump has ordered the reopening of the Alcatraz prison in a social media post. Now, you might say he actually wants it to be expanded as well, which is interesting because it kind of filled up the entire island when it was there. However, you can always build up. So skyscrapers of prisons. I love it. And also, it means we might get another sequel to The Rock. And that's what I'm hoping for more than anything else, is we need another Rock sequel. We'll work on that one. Finally, the New York air traffic controller situation is amazing. A damning assessment. This is what they said about going flying into Newark, which I've flown into many times. It's not safe. Don't fly into Newark. That's it. Wow. Now, we covered this in the documentary, Countdown to the Next Aviation Disaster. This region is particularly short on air traffic controllers. That is the situation. Also, Newark, just a rough airport overall, I will say. Not the best. Really kind of in the middle of nowhere, oddly. Very close to New York City, but then very not close to New York City. Difficult to get around, and apparently so unsafe at this point with lack of air traffic control that you should just basically pick another airport. So there's your advice from air traffic control today. Stay out of Newark, which is good advice, by the way, for any decision that you make. Stay out of Newark. You've probably heard about there's a lot of fancy weight loss injections going around right now. Well, this is not that. These are stories that are coming from something completely different. A doctor-formulated supplement called Lean. Patty S. said, I finally found a weight loss product that works. I wanted to lose 20 pounds, and Lean really curbs my appetite. Lori M. wrote, I've struggled to get weight off, and Lean has been a lifesaver. I've been losing a couple pounds a week or more. Kelly F. said, amazing. I immediately noticed an energy boost and a healthy weight loss. I would promote this product to anyone. Now, here's the thing. Lean was actually created by a doctor, a university researcher, to provide the same powerful benefits as the GLP-1 medications you probably heard about, minus the needles. Sounds great. Clinically studied ingredients help lower blood sugar, dramatically reduce appetite, and burn your fat for energy. So if diet and exercise alone just aren't cutting it, give Lean a shot. Start today and get 20% off using the code STU20 at TakeLean.com. That's TakeLean.com. The code is STU20, TakeLean.com. Of course, results may vary. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA and are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease and are not a substitute for care from a healthcare provider. Let me tell you why Blaze TV is essential right now. Amid all the confusion and the media bias in the world, Blaze TV cuts through clearly. Here, independent voices come together to offer honest perspectives and ask tough questions and directly challenge mainstream narratives. When you subscribe to Blaze TV, you're part of more than a streaming service. You're backing real investigative journalism, compelling documentaries. We highlighted some of that today right here on the show. And of course, creators who refuse to surrender to censorship from corporate media or big tech. Join the movement today, or for just $8 a month. $8 a month. That's less than, you know, a cup of coffee per day. Join us at StuDoesAmerica.com. StuDoesAmerica.com. The promo code is Stu. You'll save $20 on your annual subscription to Blaze TV. StuDoesAmerica.com. Promo code is Stu for $20 off your subscription. StuDoesAmerica.com.